Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello and welcome to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. Thanks so much for joining me again this week. We've got a great show for you. We've got a wonderful guest. And before we even get into anything else, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room. Headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
This week is an especially poignant week for our country and for the American law enforcement officer. Because it was during this week, September 11th, 2001, that was the deadliest day in law enforcement history. Approximately 72 New York City police officers and Port Authority officers lost their lives in the line of duty while rescuing people from the World Trade Center in the horrible terrorist attack that took place from Islamic terrorism. That was the initial attack, and those officers lost their lives on that day. But hundreds more have fallen ill and died from the injuries related to breathing in the toxic dust that arose from that attack. They're dying to this day. And we continue to understand the ramifications of that terrible day. So on behalf of the men and women of law enforcement all over the United States and the American people, let's take a moment to remember those officers who have given their lives in the line of duty on that terrible day and as a result of that terrible day. Their sacrifice cannot go unremembered. Now let's get into some of the insanity that's been taking place all over the country regarding law enforcement, as I normally do, in my view from the blue. First of all, I actually want to compliment something that took place. I know you don't usually hear that because usually I'm usually on my rant for the duration of this segment. But something took place a couple days ago that I think was pretty beautiful, and it involves the Cleveland Browns and law enforcement. If you'll remember, just during the preseason game, some of the Cleveland Browns players did their Colin Kaepernick insanity, and instead of standing up for the national anthem, they took their knees and their protest about, you know, police brutality, et cetera, whatever. And the outcry was fast and furious. The Cleveland Police Department, the officers who were working in that game, then decided, well, you know what? And the police union came out and said it. If they're not going to have enough respect for our country, we're not going to participate in their games. And this is the first time that a police agency took a real stand. And well, let me say this. The police officers and their union took a stand. The police agency itself was a lot more measured in their response. But something took place in the ensuing week or so. And what resulted was at their first game, their real game, when the team took the field, they took the field running alongside the men and women of the police department, the EMTs, the fire department, and the military. And they all stood together for the national anthem. Nobody took a knee. It was really a very emotional looking kind of opportunity that they took, and I think it really played an important role in showing that besides the division, we can all come together as a nation, and it's what we should be doing. It is only through unity and not through division that we as a country will survive and thrive. And I think that even though, you know, some of these players demonstrated, you know, their stupidity at their pregame with failing to stand for the national anthem. They took a different tact this time, and stood with the men and women of law enforcement and the military and first responders. And that's something that I wanted to talk about today and applaud, because if we saw a little bit more of that, perhaps we'd see a little bit less of the madness. Talk about madness. It seems like if I'm not talking about Berkeley, I'm talking about Portland. Every week there seems to be one, they seem to be like trying to up each other as far as stupidity and libtardiness. I just think I just made that name up, that word, but I think you understand what it means. What happened in Portland this week left me scratching my head and taking an additional blood pressure pill. Because what they have done, there were two things that took place. The Portland Police Bureau, which now has a new police chief. Let me talk about that first of all. That idiot mayor that they have there, Ted Wheeler, this guy ought to be just, he ought to be run out of town on a rail. I've never seen such a moronic, megalomaniac, politician, liberal, dumbass. He has literally taken over the police department. He's fired every police chief in the last number of years, so he could run it the way he wants to with his political agenda driving the entire police department. So now, he put out, after he fired the last chief, he put out a, and I commented on this show about it, he put out basically a job announcement. And the job announcement was so clearly political in what he wanted. He wanted a black female. He didn't care about anybody's qualifications. He wanted himself a black female to run the police department. He was going to get it. So he made the qualifications such that only a black female would qualify. Sure enough, he hires a former deputy chief of Oakland. Now, let me talk about that for just a second. Oakland Police Department's leadership is one of the most screwed up places in the entire planet. There has been nothing but issues with the leadership there. And what does he do? He goes to the most screwed up police department's leadership and hires one of those guys, or women in this particular case. By the way, if you'll remember that moron of a police commissioner in Baltimore when they had the riots there, Anthony Batts, well, guess where he was before that? Yeah, Oakland, exactly. So now this new police chief, this is like, she's now been on the job, I don't know, a couple of weeks, a month, I don't know how long. And the first thing that they start announcing is that the City of Portland Police Department is now ending their gang identification unit. Now, what does that mean? They're refusing to call gang members gang members. Yeah, I don't know what they're going to call them, but they came out with this absolutely insane press conference being given by the leadership of the police department, who I don't know if these guys are drinking the Kool-Aid or if they're just doing it because they don't have any choice because of their idiot mayor and the new police chief. But, you know, the only way to combat gang crimes is to identify that it's gang crimes. Otherwise, you treat them like they're each individual crimes. And the only way to prosecute these, many of these, are through racketeering statutes. The only way you can use them is by showing that there is a criminal enterprise. So the police department has now come out and said, well, you know what? We don't want to stigmatize these poor gang members. I mean, we don't want to call them names. We might stick with them. So they're just ending it. They're just saying, you know what? We're not going to call them gang members anymore. We're going to purge the database that is probably one of the most important tools in fighting gang crimes. They're just ending it. It's the most absurd thing I have ever heard. And they're doing it. This is actually following the Obama administration's idiocy with what they were trying to do. You know, by failing to call, in the federal system, they weren't allowed to call prisoners anymore. They had to call them like guests of the state or some other garbage. Anyway, they're doing the same thing now. The mayor of Portland, this idiot Wheeler, is basically taking everything in law enforcement and dismantling it. And the only thing that's going to happen by doing this is it's going to feed the criminals and give them more and more latitude to commit their crimes, because it is literally taking the most important tool that the police have and flushing it down the toilet. These people are absolutely out of their minds. And if this is the first command decision that this new police chief is making, then she is as idiotic as the mayor. And I just feel so bad for those working cops up in Portland. And talk about Portland once again. Antifa, they reared their ugly heads at another protest. The immediately began attacking the cops with slingshots, and two officers were injured. Only 9 of these Antifa punks were arrested. There should have been multiple arrests. But once again, who's pulling the strings here? Who's the marionette? Who's pulling the strings of these puppets? And it's Wheeler, and it's that new police chief. And they had these violent individuals all masked up, throwing smoke bombs and tear gas at their cops, many of whom did not have any protective gear on. And eventually, the properly equipped with riot gear and helmets and the proper stuff, they came out and started making arrests. But it was too little too late. They only arrested 9 of these punks, and 2 officers were injured. Immediately upon this protest turning violent, there's demonstration, and the demonstrators weren't violent. The demonstrators were demonstrating. There was people on 2 different sides of the issue, and they were demonstrating the way they should, by peacefully. Well, this Patriot Prayer group, and there's only a handful of them, they're being depicted as the crazies here. But it was these Antifa punks that once again disembarked from buses, and you know, they were transported to this. They had weapons, and they attacked law enforcement as they normally do. And the response from the law enforcement was very disappointing. They eventually did make some arrests. But then what happens? The Patriot Prayer people, in order to safeguard their own safety and their own lives, they went across the river to Vancouver. And guess who showed up? Pulling the same garbage, Antifa. These people are a scourge on our society. And they need to be correctly determined as a terrorist organization. That's exactly what they are. And they need to be ended. They need to, as immediately as they show up with their masks, they need to be unmasked. They need to have be arrested for their weapons. And they need to be put in jail for the crimes that they commit. By coddling them, these politicians in Portland are doing nothing except exacerbating the situation, showing their own testicular infortitude. I think I don't know if that's a real word, but it should be. And they are continuing to empower this type of violence. So once again, Portland's seems to be competing for ineffectiveness in policing. And talk about Berkeley. I something really shocking. You remember last week we had the union president of Berkeley PD, who enlightened us as to all the insanity taking place there. Well, would you believe that the police chief finally grew a pair and requested of the city government that they be allowed to deploy the normal, the every what every other police department normally deploys in a civil unrest situation. So he actually asked for permission. Now, whether he's gotten that permission, I don't know. But just the fact that he actually went out on a political limb, if you will, in that insane place of unicorns and rainbows, and asked to be given the tools to do the right thing. So that's kind of interesting. We'll see how that plays out. But once again, Mayor Wheeler and his newly elected puppet chief have shown the propensity to care more about the political correctness than the lives of their own cops. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. If you have security needs, that is, if your company needs security, we all need security, right? But if your company needs security or your business, the person you want to talk to is Doug Carter of JSD Protective Services. That's jsdprotectiveservices.com. Go check out their website. Now, I'm really impressed with their operation. I've met their folks. I've met Doug. And his commitment to the top training for these security officers is pretty impressive. These men and women that work for him are consummate security professionals. And they've got armed security. They do pretty much everything in the realm of security, which includes bodyguarding, private investigation, and they're all over the United States. So check them out, JSD Protective Services. Tell them Randy sent you. For those of you that don't know this, I'm actually an author. I have written 4 books, and they are available on Amazon.com. My first book, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, is a compilation of stories written by me and stories that I collected from cops from all over the country. The second book is called A Cop's Life. This is a critically acclaimed book. It's touched the lives of thousands and thousands of cops. In fact, I've received some absolutely incredible communications from police officers who said that they had felt alone in their feelings until they read the book. If you're a police officer, or if you are friends with one, or have a family member, A Cop's Life will probably be a great gift for your loved one or for your friend. The third book was called True Blue, To Protect and Serve, another compilation. And then The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People, where I went around the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives about who their personal heroes were. So I urge you to go on to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, look up my name, Randy Sutton, and check out those books. I think that you will finally hear and read some of the stories that will touch you.
We are one of the fastest growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We stand proudly with the men and women who serve in our armed forces and our law enforcement heroes. Thank you for being part of our family. And we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is Steve Bush. Now, Steve's an interesting guy. He's, in addition to 20 years of sales and management experience, Steve Bush is currently a reserve police senior sergeant in charge of tactical training in Cleveland, Ohio. And he worked corrections. He was with the sheriff's department. He's also certified as a senior NRA instructor, a Glock and Colt armorer, and holds a 6th degree black belt in Chinese Kenpo. He's also got a company, and this is what we're going to be talking about today, Police Ballistic Shield. And what his company does is sells products to keep law enforcement safe on the job. And they patented their what's called a Riggs Shield, is the fastest deploying in-the-car ballistic shield that mounts to the inside of a patrol car door. And that's what we're going to be talking about. Steve, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you. You're welcome.
So the Riggs Shield, talk to us about who invented this and exactly, it's a pretty interesting product. I've watched the video and I can see that it could be really beneficial, but talk about who invented it, because I think that's pretty interesting, and how it came to be.
Okay, well, the Shield was developed by Bob Riggs. Bob Riggs is currently a detective in Kern County in Bakersfield, California, and he designed it after a former partner who had left his agency to go with Chips California Highway Patrol was ambushed. His partner's vehicle, former partner's vehicle, was an armored 2011, so in essence it had bulletproof or bullet-resistant doors, and he had multiple shooters fire 9mm at his vehicle. They estimate between 30 and 50 rounds. Not a single bullet hit the doors. Bullets hit the hood, windshield, basically took out all the side windows. He put a hand up in front of his face as the glass was coming in. He had a bullet go through his hand and hit him above the left shoulder, above the vest. He was able to break up the ambush on his own. But after the aftermath, and Bob heard about it, he said, "What can we do? You're sitting there in the vehicle and your head sticking out. You got nothing to, you know, you got your vest on, but you're trapped. You've got your light box. You've got your siren, you've got your computer, you've got another partner." And of course, as years go on, the vehicles are getting smaller and smaller, so there's no place to even duck. So Bob was able to find superior ballistic material, and after almost over a year of T&E, came up with an idea to using a Kydex mount to mount a ballistic shield to a cruiser door, where it was quick deployment. And you could, within 3 seconds, deploy it, and you could use either one to extricate yourself from the ambush, or if the worst-case scenario, if you couldn't get out of it, you have to sit there, and you could return fire with it. So that was the first primary use and design of the Riggs Shield.
And I've seen it in your video. It looks very, very effective. Detective Riggs, who created this, what year did he invent this?
He started working on it in 2011, actually right after the ambush. It took him over a year. He didn't really have it ready for until about 2012.
Wow! So there was a lot of time and a lot of effort put into this. What is the material that this is made of?
Well, it's made of a proprietary ballistic fiberglass. The material is not something, some new scientific material. It's been out for almost 40 years. It was designed by a company to make safe rooms, and it's actually a building material. So the material actually is rated at 200-mile-an-hour missile. It will take a 2x4 coming at it out of an air cannon at 100 miles an hour at the same place without any penetration. It's rated level 3A shot, but level three stab, and our test is virtually broken or bent every sharp object that's trying to penetrate it under lab and under our own testing.
How many units do you think that are actually out in service now, do you think?
I would say we're getting close to 1,000 units out there in the actual usage. We've sold them, I mean, the United States, we've sold them to federal agencies, we've sold them to state agencies, we've sold them to local PDs and sheriff's departments. Now, we've also exported them to South Korea and Peru, and we are ready for our first shipments going to Chile and Japan. These will go to their national police agencies.
Well, you know, considering this is a very new product, it's amazing that you've sold as many as you have. Have you been able to track and see if there have been any usages where it's actually saved a police officer?
Yes, there have. We had called the top five, and let me expand on it. It's not just in the vehicle. I have, besides the black belt you mentioned, I actually have five black belts, and I have a lot of hand-to-hand combat experience from corrections and working projects and in law enforcement. So I actually took it out and I developed a martial art or self-defense techniques, because it's strictly a defensive tool for the rig shield. And out of the vehicle, when you're using stops, you're doing alarm calls, you're doing suspicious person. I mean, it's been used for everything. So I can give you a couple of examples right off the top of my head. A officer responded to a domestic disturbance. The suspect grabbed a steak knife. The male and female were separated. She said something. He went off on her. He grabbed a steak knife off the kitchen table and tried to stab her. The officer got between her and the suspect with a knife. The knife hit the shield, virtually folded back, broke, and went back into his hand. The officer tased him, and that was the end of it. Nobody had to be shot. No one had to be killed. And the suspect, only injury was basically he was tasered and he stabbed himself with his own knife.
Well, that sounds like a happy ending to me.
Correct. And we've had another one where, and then we've had this happen. The shields have taken tasers, stun guns, baseball bats, clubs.
You mean in the field?
In the field. Yeah, they've actually in the field have taken it, the shield virtually, because it's being able to take a 200-mile-an-hour missile. This isn't like soft armor. This isn't like a lot of shield. You can virtually, I do demonstrations where an individual will hold the shield and I'll take an asp or a bat and I'll hit it full force and they'll wince as I'm coming at them, and then they go look at their arm and there's nothing there. They can't believe, they don't even feel a shock wave on the other side. So we've had officers being hit with pipes and the pipes come back and it ricochets off and it hits the suspect back in the head. And we've had several suspects knock themselves out with their own pipes.
I wish I had a video of that.
Yeah, I wish I did too.
<I'll bet. laughs>
We've had individuals take tasers to individuals, and we actually tried it ourselves on our. We actually tested it on ourselves. The shield does not conduct electricity, so we've had suspects that try to use tasers, stun guns, various varieties, and it's done zero. The shield has once that we know of stopped 240 calibers, one to the head, one to the neck. The officer didn't even have a bruise on his arm after it was shot.
So hold on a second. So actually in the field, the shield actually saved the life of a police officer.
It actually has. Yeah. Well, considering that you go with the we've had I think half a dozen stop stabs and pipes. So let's put it this way. I think about six people are still walking around because of the shield.
Well, that's pretty damn good, especially considering you only have 1,000 out there. That's a hell of a track record.
Well, we have them in a lot of different places. They're with a number of warrant units have purchased them. They're real quick to deploy. They're fast. You can get into apartments. You can get into double-wide trailers, single-wide trailers, very small compartments. The shield only weighs 5 pounds. It's 11 by 8.5 by 1/2 inch. It comes with a handle. It comes with arm strap. It comes with Picatinny light rail so you can mount a flashlight on it. We've had agencies use it for international agencies use it for boarding parties going on ships to go through holds and so forth. It's fast. You can run with it. You can shoot with it. You can do reloads with it. You can use long arms, short arms, sub guns with it. It is a very fast tool, unlike a lot of shields that are in the trunk, they're in the bag, they're behind you, they're someplace else. You forget about it. This is something that the officer can pick up with him, and he can go before the SWAT team arrives, before the tactical team arrives. Even in the tactical situation, when they go through the door, usually the SWAT officer, the shield carrier, is going to drop the shield once they get in. This way, everyone can have a shield. Yeah, you have your level 3 or level 4 armor, but yeah, everyone's shooting for the face anymore, so it protects your face and your neck area from being killed, and most of the officers are dying from the face and head shots. That's what's happening to most of the deaths, and they're happening, and the LEOs are being shot in the head, and the suspects are going for the head on a regular basis.
And the mounting of the shield that's in the car, I noticed that it's just below the window. And I was impressed by how fast it could be deployed. I mean, it's literally within like seconds.
2 or 3 seconds is the average. We can get a guy trained in 2 or 3 seconds. I've done demos where we've got officers within 5 seconds, 6 seconds to be able to bring a shield up and actually be shooting and returning fire. So, I mean, first rule of ambush is either get out of the ambush or shoot. So, I mean, it's fast, it's quick. If it's on your arm and you don't need a lot of training, we do a train-trainer program that I can train trainers in one day and then go out and back in the field. It doesn't take a lot of skill to learn how to use it. It's simple because if somebody attacks you, the first thing you're going to do is put your arm in front of your hand, in front of your face to block it, and it's going to be on your arm. So you don't have to think about it. It's there. That's why it's been effective when it has, because it's a force multiplier, because it does only weigh 5 pounds, but that 5 pounds, you're virtually bringing a wall with you. So when somebody goes to either disarm you, goes to strike you, go to hit you, go to hurt you, you can stop them. And then when you need to take them and put them in a compliance hold, this turns you into a fifth degree black belt, because it gives you a large service without injuring the suspect, and to put them in a compliance position that you can take somebody that's 300 plus pounds, and you might be only a 90, 100 pounder yourself, and you can virtually take them down to the ground in seconds and put them in a compliance hold.
One of the things that I noticed when I was watching the video is that it seems almost instinctual to be able to use it, which is something that, I mean, let's face it, the typical normal weapons, defensive weapons that officers carry, either the baton or the asp or the taser, that they require a certain skill set that is a learned skill set. And, you know, let's face it, in training, there can be a lot of times when there isn't, the skill set can't be learned that quickly. And if you don't use it all the time, then you get rusty with it, just like all your defensive tactics. So by having something like this, it truly is a a method that is, you know, I don't want to say foolproof because nothing is, but it certainly is a lot easier to instinctually use it than many of the other products that are out there.
Well, I look at it in my martial arts skills. When I started looking at this and I started working with it and coming up with the tactics, I looked at it were simple, easy, fast to use, don't have to think about it. The last thing anybody wants to do is people want to do is train. I got enough as going on as it is. You know, the shifts they work, a lot of people work extra jobs, family situations, and I call it Officer Donut. I don't want to do anything, and I don't want to train. So I took it down to the basic levels with it, working with it. I've taught four-year-olds karate. So I said, okay, what would a four-year-old or five-year-old do, and how fast? And the net instinctively, they're going to block, and they defend themselves with this. It takes virtually little to no training to use it. And that's that. As you said, it's instinctive. And if anybody trains with it the slightest bit, then it's like you're increasing your skill set by 1,000 times each time you work with it.
Have you had any negative type of comments, or have there been any resistance? Because you know as well as I do, law enforcement agencies don't like change, no matter what the change is.
Right.
So here you're trying to introduce basically an entire new concept to law enforcement about self-protection. So I can imagine that you've run into some naysayers about it.
Well, I had some say that it looks too militaristic.
Oh, okay. Of course, we have to use the militaristic thing, because that, of course, right, is one of the buzzwords of the current times.
Correct. It's too militaristic, and that's what we emphasize, that it is not a impact weapon. It is a self-defense tool. We teach no strikes with the shield whatsoever. It is strictly all blocks and compliance. And the suspect striking it, he ends up injuring himself, knocking himself out, breaking things, hurting himself. That's his choice. But that's what we run into the most, is that they think it's too militaristic, or they just don't want to spend the time with it. It's I didn't have it, I didn't use it, and I didn't need it when I was on patrol, and I don't want it, or I don't want to spend the time on it. It's too hard for me. We've had T&Es that have gone out that they haven't even opened the box and they sent it back, because the major, colonel, captain, whoever is, he didn't want to deal with it because it took away from his training budget of the other things that he had planned and on the effort. And he just forgets how things are. But I think if they really looked at it, it makes a difference, because, you know, a lot of the officers are by themselves. Things happen real fast. And this gives, the way I explain it and the way we train it, is this gives the officer an opportunity to give that second chance. And this actually is a use of force reducer for people saying it's too militaristic, because it gives the officer an opportunity to, now I have a choice. And depending on my, I call it the Batman belt, your utility belt, what you're carrying, whether you've got a taser or you've got an ASP or you've got OC or you've got your lethal force, which is your duty weapon. Now, if something jumps off, I've got something between me and the suspect and what's going down, and I can make a choice, and I've got time to react, where in some cases there's too many times to react where I'm scared, I got nothing else to do, I'm going to pull my duty weapon and I'm going to fire, because I can't react in time. This is going to make a difference, and this is going to be a force reducer instead of a force add-on by doing this.
You know, one of the things that I noticed, and I guess that this would come under the title of the hesitancy to change, is I could see utilizing this on every traffic stop. You know, because of that instinctual movement, when someone does draw that weapon in a surprise move, it is instinct just to put your arm up. I mean, we've seen that time and time again, especially in the injuries to the officers. It's, you know, they get hit in that instinctual moment. And I could see that this would be a real benefit, even on just your, you know, your traffic stop for I hate the word routine traffic stop, but in essence, you know, that's an activity that cops do, you know, multiple times a day. I just wonder what because there's always a learning curve, even, you know, with not only with the police, but with the public. If they were to see that as an officer walks up on their car, what that reaction would be.
Well, I have had an agency, Velcro, the electronic ticket books on the back of it. there's a lot of things that people look at it. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's getting used to it. But the thing is, it doesn't have to be out in your face. It's down on your arm. So, right, I mean, right. in depending on how you deploy it, I mean, you can even have it down at rest and not even holding one handle and just have it kind of hanging from the strap. You know, it just depends, and they get used to it. They get used to it. The quick reaction is a quick reaction. I can't really say for each agency how they use it. We have some agencies that keep it in the car, and other ones, they take it out every place they go. I have an officer that sent a video of him shooting with it, and he said, I won't get out of the car with it. Even when I go to lunch, I take it with me.
Really? That's interesting. That's interesting.
He said he'll take it with it. We actually have, we put D-rings on them so they could be clipped and you reverse it away from the handle, and we found a hook, it's called a Zac hook, that you can actually hook to your utility belt, and you could snap it on your belt, because we found people that want it. We had motor officers that want to put it in their saddlebags. We have bike officers. In fact, we have foreign bike officers that mounted, they have a bag mount, they back to their bicycles, where they mount it on a single point sling when they're on foot patrol, carrying it with them, because again, it's 5 pounds. It weighs less than an AR-15. So, I mean, it isn't that heavy, and it's pretty well balanced, and it's pretty compact. But it's just having it with you. I know another case of a B&E. I think it was a 13, 14-year-old did a breaking entering. He had a pry bar or some type. Officer came around the corner, and the suspect was also an illegal immigrant, went to part his hair with a pry bar. And he brought up the shield and blocked it and used his asp to take the suspect down. And it saved him from getting his skull crushed or cracked or potentially maybe killed by the pry bar.
These are fantastic stories about these saves. What you need to do is awareness, which is one of the reasons I'm happy to have you on the show, is because this is a tool that could be a game changer in a lot of situations. Are you finding that people that purchase it, are you finding greater success with the agencies themselves or officers themselves who are buying it out of their own pocket and utilizing it that way?
I'm finding guys that buy it out of their own pocket use it a lot. And we sell it to individual officers. We only sell it to law enforcement. So it's either, you know, we have to verify the credentials. But we find officers and we find buddies that buy them for them and so forth. But yeah, the individual officers will call you back and say, hey, I used this. I did this with it. It was a great product, yada, yada, yada. Or they'll come back. And now we're on Gen 5, not the materials itself, but, you know, the skin and the tabs. And sometimes we'll tweak this and tweak that because we want it to be right. And that's what it is. And we work with the guys in the field, and they'll say, yeah, and that's why we came up with the D-rings, because he said, hey, we got to someplace that we got to hang this thing. and we wanted, and then, oh, if you made the tab this way, it would fit differently. Or they send pictures and they do their own thing and say, hey, we made the mounts way. The mounts, by the way, can be mounted on a cruiser door and taken off. So you're not drilling holes into a vehicle that's not yours, and the agency didn't give you permission to put holes into it. So if you have your take-home vehicle, you could do it. Or if they even want to have a fleet that they don't want to put holes in the doors, they could do that also. But yeah, the individual officers are coming back more than the agencies by themselves.
You know, the question is, I'm a police officer in an agency, and I go out and buy one of these. Is the department going to give me a ration of crap because of it and not allow me to use it? What's the feedback from that scenario?
Well, we have some of them that what they do is they go ahead and get permission to do it. We have some of them we don't, you know, it's not up to me to make that call. So I don't know what they're doing. Some of them, I think they've gone ahead and got permission. Some of them, I think they just went ahead and said they mounted. We seem to have a lot more calls after something has happened.
that makes sense.
Yeah, after some shooting has happened, or if somebody has one of these and they've been able to do something with it, then all of a sudden everybody and his cousin is calling, trying to buy one. We even have family members at holidays call in and say, hey, I want to buy such and such, such and such. I say, that's great, but we still have to have their credentials to be able to buy it, so that, you know, you're not going to be able to surprise them. But yeah, it's unfortunate, though. It's always after something happens that the sales seem to spike up. The interesting thing, though, a lot of these people miss is that this thing is virtually, I hate to say the word stab-proof, but it's stab-proof. We have shot arrows into it by a professional archer, and we got one to sort of stick in. Three of them, different broad tips, bounced off. We shot crossbolt in it, one of the strongest ones you can get, at almost, I think it was 15, 10 feet, almost on top of it. Barely got it to stick in, but it ruined the arrow. Never penetrated even close. And we've had countless knives have bent. So this is not only shot, but I don't know anybody else's experience, but my experience was it's more knives. And I've seen in my area, most male adults are carrying knives on them.
Right. So yeah. And we've seen more stabbings lately as well.
Right. So this, you most saw best, the Kevlar is going to, the knife is going to go through it like a hot knife through butter. So this thing is virtually stab proof. And it is a tremendous stabbing, defensive tool. And that's why we also have a correction version. The correction version is less the mount and is still shot resistant, but you're not going to see a gun in the jail. Hope not. But the shanks, the shivs, and all the homemade tools that they make, sure, to stab you with, this will virtually, they'll end up with a shiv and shank in their hands, because this will virtually snap it off. This is a tremendous hand-to-hand tool, defensive tool in hand-to-hand combat. I actually used this at the mock riot in 2015, and I think I took down over 100 individuals over 3 days doing different demonstrations at my booth, and I took two and three individuals on at once. No other tool other than this. I've actually, if I had this shield, I really don't need anything else other than restraints to put on the suspect once they're on the ground.
Right. So how do I've had in it, How would we're kind of running low on time here. So how do officers see your product and order your product?
Okay, well, they go to our website, which is policeballisticshield.com.
Spell that out, because it's a little long.
So it's a word. Okay, it's the word police, which is, you know, word police. Ballistic, right, which is B-A-L-L, ISTIC, and then the word SHIELD, SHIELD.com. We are probably the first one or second entry when you put through Google or a search engine that you'll find Police Ballistic Shield, or you can type in RIG Shield, which is, it is actually called the RIG Shield, which is RIGGS Shield is the name of the shield.
Well, you know, like all great innovations, they spring out of need. And the fact that Detective Rigg created this because of the incredible, attempt on his partner's life, I think that it shows the need for a product like this. So once again, I urge my listeners, if you're in law enforcement or you want to buy a gift for your loved one who is in law enforcement, go to policeballisticshield.com. Take a look at it. You've got some great videos on it. And I think that this is a product that will, in the future, save many, many lives. And I appreciate you coming on the show, Steve. This is a need, and I'm glad that your company is addressing it.
Okay, thank you.
End of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to those men and women of law enforcement who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have five names to read. The first is Police Officer Bernie Domagala of the Chicago Police Department. Police Officer Bernie Domagala succumbed to complications of a gunshot wound sustained on July 14th, 1988, while at the scene of a barricade situation. The officer, who was a member of the hostage barricade and terrorist unit, had responded to the home after the homeowner, a former police officer, had shot a mover who was attempting to evict him. Officer Domagala had taken up a position behind the corner of a nearby garage approximately 100 feet from the home. As he peeked around the garage's corner, the subject fired one round from a replica Civil War-era pistol, and the round struck the officer in the forehead. He was charged with attempted murder, but in December 1990, he was found incompetent to stand trial and was committed to the state mental hospital. The wound caused Officer Domagala to suffer a traumatic brain injury that left him disabled and confined to a rehabilitation center for the next several years. He underwent numerous brain surgeries and continued to experience severe complications, and he passed away on September 5th, 2017. He had served with the Chicago Police Department for 7 years, was assigned to the Gang Crimes Unit, and he survived by his wife and three children. Police Officer Bernie Domagala, Chicago Police Department. End of watch, Tuesday, September 5th, 2017. Deputy Constable Mark Diebold of the Tarrant County Constable's Office, Precinct 5 in Texas. Deputy Constable Mark Diebold suffered a fatal heart attack following qualifications for the agency's tactical team. Members of the tactical team immediately began CPR when he collapsed following the qualifications. He was transported to Alliance Medical Center, where he was pronounced dead. Deputy Diebold had served with the Tarrant County Constable's Office, Precinct 5, for 9 years. Previously served with the Tarrant County Sheriff's Office for 14. He is survived by his wife and two children. Deputy Constable Mark Diebold, Tarrant County Constable's Office, his end of watch, Thursday, September 7th, 2017. Police Officer William Matthews of the Wayzata Police Department in Minnesota. Police Officer William Matthews was struck and killed by a vehicle on Route 12 between Route 101 and Shoreline Drive at approximately 12:30 p.m. He was in the process of removing debris from the roadway when a vehicle struck him. The driver of that car that struck him was arrested and charged with criminal vehicular homicide. Officer Matthews has served with the Wayzata Police Department for 19 years. He is survived by his wife and 7-year-old son. Police Officer William Matthews, Wayzata Police Department, end of watch, Friday, September 8th, 2017. Deputy Sheriff Julie Bridges of the Hardy County Sheriff's Office in Florida. Deputy Sheriff Julie Bridges and Sergeant Joseph Osman of the Florida Department of Corrections were killed in a vehicle crash at the intersection of Route 66 and Old Cruiseville Road in Zolfo Springs at approximately 6:45 a.m. Both officers had been required to stay in the county despite mandatory evacuations due to Hurricane Irma. Deputy Bridges was picking up supplies for a hurricane shelter when her patrol car collided head-on with Sergeant Osman's vehicle. Sergeant Osman was reporting for his shift at the Hardy Correctional Institution, which remained open despite the evacuation. Deputy Bridges had served with the Hardy County Sheriff's Office for 13 years. She is survived by her 8-year-old son. Sergeant Osman has served with the Florida Department of Corrections for 21 years. Deputy Sheriff Julie Bridges, Hardy County Sheriff's Office, Florida. Sergeant Joseph Osman, Florida Department of Corrections. End of watch, Sunday, September 10th, 2017. All of these law enforcement officers gave their lives in the line of duty. May they rest in peace. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. Now, I'm your host, Randy Sutton. You can find me at Facebook. If you look under Facebook and you see Randy Sutton Public Figure, just like that or follow it, and you can see everything that I write and post. You can communicate with me there as well. I answer all of my messages personally. You can also find me at Twitter at LT Randy Sutton, LT Randy Sutton at Twitter. And you can find my books at Amazon.com. I have 4 books, and I think you'll like them. A Cop's Life, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and The Power of Legacy. Thanks again.